Well, good morning. Welcome. Today we're going to talk about culture, and I'm sure all of you have experienced culture in one form or another. Usually when we talk about culture, you know, it's sort of the sum of our beliefs, our attitudes, and some of the rituals we go through on a regular basis. And a lot of times we refer to culture as sort of the organizational DNA. It's the way things get done around here. It's been built up over years and sort of always a steady state. Every once in a while, a few things challenge it, and sometimes very resilient. It resists most any type of change you try to bring into it, and it's very good at it. And a lot of times we talk about culture, we look at symbols, we look at the structures we have, control systems, and sometimes we even hear it in the form of stories. Not the stories from last year's Christmas party, but the stories that really, you know, embellish the way the organization has done things. So today we're going to talk about culture, and hopefully as we go through this, we're going to talk about where you are in the process. And our goals, Pooja and I have today, well, we should, I guess we have to do this. No financial? Nothing. Okay. We're clean. Okay. So anyway, one thing we want you to think about as we go through this, we're going to talk about some of the foundational elements we want to look at. Building and sustaining a culture. The roadmap that we're going to talk about today was developed by NATRO, and a lot of it, as we've been using it out in the field, we constantly talk to people about the culture. How do you get to an exit? How do you sustain yourself? How do you move to the next exit? So hopefully we'll be talking about some of the progress, but we'll also be talking about some of the inhibitors or resistance you run into, and how can we overcome some of that as we go through that. And hopefully we can build some strategies that will help all of us today as we move forward.
Thank you, Jack, and welcome. Good morning, everyone. So as we mentioned earlier today, I really hope you've had your coffee because we're not going to be just sitting in our chairs and sleeping. We're going to be walking around and talking to each other and sharing experiences. So just so that I can really quickly get a sense of the audience, can I get a show of hands of the local health departments? Okay, majority of you. How about state health departments? A couple. Other national, state organizations? Anybody else? Okay, some national partners. Well, great. So what we're going to be talking about, a lot of the resources have been developed specifically for local health departments, but are completely applicable to any organization that you might be coming from. So first we want to talk about some of the foundational elements for building and sustaining a QI culture. And I really want to emphasize that sustaining piece, because a lot of times we do get started with QI, make a little bit of progress, and then something happens, there's a competing issue, there's some turnover, and you sort of lose that momentum. And so based on these six foundational elements, we're really going to be talking about how to incorporate all of these six into your culture so that you can sustain that progress moving forward. Okay. So I'm going to walk through each of those six foundational elements, and you have at your seats a questionnaire that lists out all of those six foundational elements. And as I talk about each of these foundational elements, I want you to take a look at the questions within that category and think about your agency. We've selected a few key indicators for each of these elements. So take a look at those. Think about where your agency has made progress with regard to that question. Jack and I are doing some research on building and sustaining a QI culture in local health departments, and we've hand-selected some health departments that are a little bit more experienced and advanced in quality improvement in terms of they've been working on it for several years, they've been involved in a lot of national or state-level initiatives like the Multi-State Learning Collaborative, so they have a wealth of experience with QI. So we've administered the survey to them. So as you're completing the survey, we'll show some preliminary results from that data so that you can kind of compare yourself and benchmark against them. So starting with leadership commitment. This is really, really important, particularly at the onset. If you don't have leadership commitment, it's going to be hard to sustain that progress. A lot of times you have a QI champion in the organization that gets it going. But if the leadership isn't on board, it's going to really be difficult to take it to that next level. So in terms of leadership, they're going to need to understand the quality concepts and really buy into them so that they can breathe life into the QI program at your organization. They're going to need to dedicate resources, allow for staff time, ensure that they're holding staff accountable to quality improvement, seeking out new resources and funding to do quality improvement in your organization. Communication and transparency is key. Talking to staff about quality improvement, telling them what changes are ahead, what the expectations are, what QI is, and the value. Keeping it on, you know, staff meeting agendas, sending emails, that kind of thing. And clear priorities, aligning it with the agency's strategic direction. And then managing change. Jack is going to be talking a little bit about change management in a few minutes, but that's a key responsibility of leadership to address any sort of resistance that arises along the way. So take a few minutes to answer this set of questions. Leadership commitment. Does your senior leadership dedicate resources to QI? Do they understand concepts of QI? Are the leadership routinely vocalizing commitment? And are they setting clear priorities for QI that are aligned with your strategic goals and agency strategic plan? So to what degree do you have these in place? So here are some preliminary results. We've gotten responses back from 21 health departments thus far. You can see for the first two, they're doing a pretty good job. In terms of vocalizing commitment and setting clear priorities that are aligned with strategic goals, it drops off a little bit to a smaller degree. Okay, so next is the QI infrastructure. And by this, we're talking about three main things: a performance management system, a QI plan, and a QI council. So I'm just going to spend one slide talking about performance management. I could probably do the entire 90-minute presentation on it, but we don't have time for that. Performance management is the practice of actively using performance data to improve the public's health. So this is going to be a strategic use of performance measures and standards to establish performance targets and goals, prioritizing and allocating resources, making decisions like that. And so what you see here on the slide is the Turning Point model for performance management. I'm sure many of you have seen it. Another more common graphic is the square with the four quadrants. And so they're identifying four major components of a performance management system. First are performance standards. These are sort of goals, targets, and benchmarks that you're striving towards. So, for example, a standard could be 80% satisfaction, customer satisfaction at clinics, and that type of thing. Performance measures are the actual unit or metric that you're using to assess your progress against these standards. Then you're going to want to make sure that you're reporting progress against these performance measures to your stakeholders, to your staff, to your local governing entity, your senior managers, division directors, and even the community. And then you're going to use this performance management system and all this data really as a springboard for quality improvement so that you can make sure that you're focusing your QI resources on those key priority issues that really need the attention, where your performance might be lagging. And to make sure that you're really system-wide performance management, many of you probably already do have standards and performance measures that you're reporting in some areas of your agency, but really making it cross-cutting. So it's not just programmatic areas, but it's also HR and IT and some of those administrative areas. So for this one, it's multiple choice, select all that apply. Which of the following applies to a performance management system in your health department? You might not have one in place yet. Maybe that you have performance standards measures in some areas. Do you have it agency-wide? Are you collecting data routinely? Are you reporting progress to stakeholders? And lastly, does this performance data drive decision making, or are you just kind of collecting it but not really doing much with it? So survey results, we've got a small handful that are either nothing formal or in some areas. The majority have this going on agency-wide. They're routinely collecting data and reporting progress. And then there's a slight drop-off in terms of using that data in key decision-making. So make sure that when you're doing this, you are using it, utilizing this data. All right, QI plan. For those of you that are applying for FAB accreditation, you know that this is one of the requirements. So here are some of the required components, just a snapshot. You want to include some definitions of quality terms. There's a lot of confusion in the field around, you know, what is QI versus quality assurance and quality control. So just to make sure that everybody in the health department is on the same page. What's your desired future state of quality? What are your goals in terms of quality? Key elements of QI governance. I mentioned the QI Council before. This is really important to establish a committee that's going to kind of oversee and guide the QI efforts in the agency. They're going to be sponsoring QI projects to make sure that there's some sort of process in place that you're using to do QI and overseeing to make sure that you're monitoring progress. You want to identify what type of QI training you're going to offer staff. This is going to be key to really get that buy-in. Some goals, objectives, performance metrics, and time frame targets regarding quality improvement. How are you going to be monitoring and reporting progress on the plan? And then how are you going to evaluate the plan and revise it for the next iteration? So take a moment to answer the QI plan question. Do you have one in place? Is it being developed? Does your plan include QI goals, objectives, measures, time frame targets, associated projects that you're going to be working on? Is it aligned with strategic priorities? And is there a process in place to evaluate? So survey results show there's a handful that are kind of still working on this. The majority do have a plan in place. Okay, the third foundational element, customer focus. This is really a core tenet of quality. Customers should always be front and center. So if this isn't something that's going on right now, it's something to start thinking about. How are you going to be assessing your customers' needs? Who are your customers? If you have a strategic plan, you've probably kind of thought through some of that. And then how are you going to assess customer satisfaction and address gaps in customers' expectations? So that's a key area where you could be using quality improvement to improve customer satisfaction. So take a moment to answer these two questions. Is customer satisfaction being assessed agency-wide? And is customer satisfaction data being used to prioritize and drive improvement efforts? So survey results show there's a little bit more of a spread. Not all are really doing anything around this in terms of assessing it. Or using that data to prioritize. And so this is an area that I think could use some more focused attention. Teamwork and collaboration. This is really important. Not breaking those silos in your agencies. Talking to other divisions and departments, getting together, collaborating, sharing lessons learned, brainstorming sessions, you know. A lot of times some of the problems that you're experiencing in one part of the organization is probably going on in another as well. Forming functional QI project teams. So really thinking through, and this is going to be probably the job of the QI Council to think through who should be on a QI project team. What process are you looking to improve? Who knows that process? Who's going to be impacted by it? Who has that data analysis skills, problem solving skills, those kinds of things. And then again, sharing your lessons learned and best practices. So take a moment to answer these two questions. Best practices are routinely shared among staff, and interdepartment division QI projects are implemented to make improvements as needed. So here are some survey results. Most are doing this. There's a little bit to a small degree, so a little bit of room for working on this, particularly those interdepartment and division QI projects. You want to be sure you're working on the vital few and the useful many. So they're going on at the macro level and the micro level. Employee empowerment. Granting authority to staff to improve quality in their own work processes. Involving them and getting their input in decision making. Cultivating QI champions throughout the agencies. These are really going to be driving the QI efforts and advocating. And then again, so important, provide training and resources. Don't hold staff expectations to things that they're not trained to do. So take a moment to answer these few. Staff suggestions are utilized in decision making. Are there QI champions throughout your agency, or is it just one or two that are spread out? Is there sufficient QI training and resources that's continually available to meet staff needs? And there is going to be a point where they're going to require a little bit more advanced training. So the surveyed health departments are doing pretty good with giving some decision-making authority. You've got some QI champions throughout the agency. Drops off a little bit in terms of continuous resources and training that's available. It's hard to sort of secure those resources, but that's something that leadership would really need to do to seek out, make sure it's available. And then the last element, continuous process improvement. Identify root causes of problems. These are the QI projects. You want to make sure you're trying to reduce variations and redundancies in processes. So once you improve a process, standardize it throughout the agency. Improving quality, increasing customer satisfaction, researching what those QI quality improvement models are out there and figure out what's best for your agency. PDCA, Lean, Six Sigma, whatever it is, adopt a formal QI process. So do you have one or more formal QI model that you're using in your agency to make improvements, or is it kind of a bit more informal or ad hoc? Are there processes in place to monitor and sustain improvements achieved through QI projects? A lot of times you might achieve a measurable improvement, but then you'll forget to monitor progress to make sure you're holding those gains. So establish a process for that. Staff at every level use QI tools in daily work to improve quality. So the majority have a QI model that they're using, a little less that have processes in place where they're monitoring the sustained improvement, so make sure you're thinking about that. And then there's actually the majority of them, to a small degree, they have staff at every level using QI tools and techniques, and this is where that employee empowerment piece comes in. Train them, make sure they know how to use these tools, make sure they know the value of them. Okay, so you have, this is an abridged version of that survey, but you have a completed survey now. This could be a really great tool to take back to your health department staff to generate conversation and discussion around what you have in place now and where you can go forward. Okay, who all is familiar with NATO's roadmap to an organizational culture of quality improvement? A few hands. Okay. So this is a tool that has been developed to guide local health departments through this transformational change from the beginning where you have little to no knowledge or experience all the way to a QI culture. The NATO QI Leaders Learning Community, which is a group of QI leaders from local health departments, we convene them quarterly for conference calls and in-person meetings. They've helped us significantly put input into this roadmap, so it's based on practice that they have experienced as they've been building their cultures. So I'm going to talk about the roadmap for a minute. Each phase here, from no knowledge of QI, not involved in QI activities, informal or ad hoc QI, some formal activities in specific areas, formal agency-wide QI, and then lastly, a QI culture. Each phase has characteristics of what a health department looks like in that phase, and then transition strategies to kind of show you how to move to the next phase in the roadmap. So I'm going to be walking through each of these. Think through as I'm talking which phase your agency is, and then Jack is going to lead us through an activity in just a moment. So I'm going to take a couple of minutes to walk through. Phase one, or exit one, no knowledge of QI. There's a lack of understanding. Competing priorities are kind of put above quality improvement, a reason to avoid it. There's generally a satisfaction with the status quo. There's no value or link to QI in public health, and data is not used in decision making. Transition strategies early on really focus them on leaders, senior management, get them on board, market it to them, show them why it's valuable, train them, share success stories from other health departments, other sectors, show them how it's going to impact the bottom line. Assess the current culture. See where your organization is right now and continuously start thinking about how you're going to manage change as you introduce this to staff. Exit two, not involved with QI. Characteristics here, you're beginning to understand quality improvement. Leadership aren't really holding staff accountable to it. There's little expectation around actually doing it. So they're talking about it. Staff is kind of viewing this as a trend. Oh, leadership's talking about it, but it's just this month. We're not really going to follow through. Limited use of data, few QI trainings available, not really customer focused. So start integrating QI into agency planning, into your strategic planning. Establish a QI council and QI plan. Get that foundation in place so that you have something that's going to steer and drive these efforts. Start establishing a plan for performance management. You're probably already doing it a little bit. Figure out how you can do it agency-wide. Cultivate QI champions. Get a sense of who on your staff is really engaged and kind of gung-ho and innovative. There's a question. Right. Yeah. You know, usually there is going to be somebody in the organization that is bought into it. If you're looking at a resource like this, there's probably somebody that's interested in quality improvement. Maybe there's a QI champion, you know, in the organization, so they can start talking to their leadership. Maybe there is somebody on leadership. Maybe the health director is really gung-ho about it, but the rest of senior management isn't. So having that one person, and really it takes one person, you know, and then having them talk to leadership to sort of show them how it could be of value. Does that make sense?
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. Jack, do you have any thoughts on that? Yeah. Okay. And if they're moving forward, if anybody else has experiences around that they can share, that would be great. Is there another question?
Well, this training is really important, but I don't know about the resources to go to tapping them. Put that on the website.
Yeah. So I will talk about that later on. Yeah. So exit three, informal or ad hoc QI activities. QI efforts are happening informally. You might not be following a formal improvement model, or they might be going on in discrete areas of the agencies, very small QI projects, not really system-wide. Some performance monitoring and data use. Staff are getting a little anxious, fear of placing blame, fear that, you know, their performance is going to be called out, they're going to get in trouble, that kind of thing. QI training is periodically available at this point. Some strategies for transition. Formalize a process for QI. This is going to be a QI council, probably. Figuring out how they're going to select QI projects, form those teams, and get it going. start thinking about or start developing those performance measures and standards agency-wide. Assess customer satisfaction. Figure out who's already assessing it. Figure out who isn't assessing it. Celebrate improvements as they happen. This is really going to be important when you're trying to maintain engagement. Address any resistance that arises. This is going to be really the role of the leadership. And incentivize QI. So formal QI activities in specific areas. There's a greater reliance on data at this point. There are certain parts of the agencies that are doing this, others that aren't. QI training and resources, pretty readily available now. You have QI champions and mentors that are talking to staff and helping them through this work. Data-driven decision-making is starting to happen. Discrete QI projects are going on throughout the organization. Improvements not really consistently sustained. So strategies, start applying best practices and lessons learned throughout the agencies. Break those silos, you know, talk to other departments and divisions. Use performance and customer satisfaction data. Evaluate and revise your QI plan. Get a next iteration going. And provide advanced QI training for those that need it. Exit 5, formal agency-wide QI. So you've got it pretty much in place. Most staff are engaged. There's a formal performance management system in place. You're reporting progress to your stakeholders. You're using that data to identify QI projects that are really going to give you that most bang for your buck. You've got QI projects at the micro and macro level, standardization and processes, reduction in redundancies. And there's a learning and sharing culture going on. Strategies for transition, incorporate QI into performance plans and position descriptions. Measure and report on return on investment. And contribute to the evidence based in the field. So then you've reached your QI culture. All staff are 100% committed. New staff are sort of oriented to this as they come in. A lot of times with QI, competing priorities, H1N1, budget cuts, things like this, staff turnover, they're going to impede progress. At this point, it really shouldn't happen. Ongoing training is available. Data and QI tools used daily. Customers front and center. Hopefully, you're demonstrating return on investment at this point. Problems are seen as gold. You want problems. You want to use innovation to fix these problems. And lastly, think about sustainability. Think about it throughout the process, but always have that in your mind. Whatever progress you're making, you need to sustain it, and that goes back to those six foundational elements and getting them in place.
One of the things we wanted to do before we break you up into groups is, the food you went through the survey was to sort of get a sense of where the room is. And what I'd like to do is just go back to the questions now that you had a chance to think about them and just get a quick score. So in the first one, we had leadership commitment. Sort of look at the four questions there and sort of figure out where you are. What I wanted to get is leadership, you know, as we talk about it, you know, not at all. Is there anybody in that category? Not at all. Is there some little glimmer of leadership? How about to a small degree for that category?
Looks
about
right.
How about a large degree? How about as part of your culture? You had that stat. Right? How about if you looked at the QI infrastructure, where we talked about, you know, the performance management system in the state. So as part of that, you know, if you looked at that, would you say you don't have a system at all, any performance management system, anybody like that? People have a performance management system to a small degree. How about to a large degree? By the culture? Oh, okay. How have you been doing this for a
while? We have an outlier here.
Yeah. How about customer focus? Do you have it too? Not at all. No customer focus. How about to a small degree customer focus?
How about your Elijah degree? How about part of your culture? Okay, how about teamwork and collaboration? Not at all. How about your small degree? How about your Elijah degree? How about empowerment? As you looked at the questions, we talked about empowerment in this case, you know, utilizing staff decisions, multiple champions, mission training. How many have not at all been empowered? How about to a small degree? How about to a large degree? And how about continuous process improvement? Not at all. How about your small degree? How about your life share? So we sort of get a mixture of a group here. We get to, you know, sort of see where we are in different parts of the process. And one of the things we wanted to do as we go through this process, maybe you could go back through the exits.
Oh, yeah.
What we want you to do is, you can see we have the exits up on the wall. And what we'd like you to do is go and group around the exits you feel you're at right now in the process. So we'd like to get up and move around. But Fuja will run back through it. Before you start, hold it. We're going to go back through the definitions again. Consider where you were with the questions. And then pick a spot where you want to be. And you will find some new friends who will join you there. And then we're going to do an exercise as a group around that exit. Okay? So just talk through them again so you sort of get them, you know.
So no knowledge. Really no understanding, not on the radar. Anybody among leadership or staff, status quo, satisfaction, not really data-driven decision-making. Okay? Not involved with QI activities. It's on the radar. You have some understanding of it, but not too much QI activity going on right now. It's sort of viewed as a trend among staff. Limited data use. Exit 3, informal or ad hoc QI. You've got elements of QI going on, maybe not following a formal QI model. But you've got maybe some few discrete QI efforts going on, a little bit of performance monitoring and data use, some staff anxiety around QI. Formal QI activities in specific areas. You've got QI projects, formally modeling an improvement model in particular departments or decisions, but not really system-wide, agency-wide. Formal agency-wide QI is going on everywhere. It's starting to become a part of the culture, part of agency planning efforts, aligned with the strategic direction, micro, macro level projects. And then QI culture, it's embraced by all staff in the organization. It's really part of the way you do business. It's front and center. Question.
Think about what exit you should go to, and then when you get to that exit, we'll get you there in a minute, and then what we want you to do is do this exercise. And we're going to talk about is if you're at those exits, and what we'd like you to do today, because I always point this out, is exits 1 through 6. There's no exit 1.5. So you're going to be all alone, okay? Or you can talk to both sides. You know, you can talk to 1 and 2. So what we want you to think about is, if you're at that exit, what are some of the inhibitors you're running into that's getting you not to move to the next exit? What we really want you to think about as a group is, if I'm at exit 2 and I want to head to exit 3, what's holding me back? And inhibitors in this case, can I click it one more time?
Mm-hmm.
These are the blocks and barriers we run into. These are the things, you know, that sort of prevent us from moving forward. It's sort of part of that, you know, block that we run into in the implementation process. And at your exit, what we'd like you to do is have a discussion with your group about what are those blocks and barriers you're running into. And then as a group, you know, pick the top three. The top three organizational inhibitors that are taking you not moving from exit 2 to exit 3. Things that you think you're going to run into, the type of resistance that you're going to see in this case. If you do one more. And on this sheet I handed out, you'll see it talks about, you know, the levels. So in this case, you have a level of importance. And the level of importance, you know, how important is it to our success as a quality improvement process? And then the level of resistance is, you know, it might be very important but low resistance, or it might be very low importance but high resistance. And we'll talk about that. But what we want you to do is also capture the rating. You know, why did we rate it, you know, a 5 or a 6? What was the process in this case? And you'll find the rating scale on the next slide. We talk about is low importance. It's a minor thing. You know, a medium importance is it's significant. It's there. We see this resistance factor as a key thing. And then high importance is really much more significant. It's really sitting there. It's very important to our success as a team to move forward to the next exit. So you'll see on the back of this page, you know, it talks about, you know, the importance, low, medium, and high. So low importance is very minor. Medium importance is significant. And high importance is superior. It's going to really impact what we're doing in this case. And then rate the resistance in this case. And the resistance is, you know, low, minor opposition. It might be a little small group in the organization. Media resistance, you know, you're meeting some opposition. You're starting to hear people say, you know, this is not what we should be doing, the roadblock. And then high resistance is really significant opposition. So what I'd like you to do is in your group, you know, sort of brainstorm the list, and we've got paper back there, and we'll hand out some markers. And then think about, take the top three and then rate them in terms of the level of importance to moving forward to the next exit, low, medium, high, and the level of resistance at present, low, medium, or high. And then you'll see on the back of this, you know, as you look at it here in the chart, you know, if it's down here with low resistance, low importance, you know, it's something you don't really need to worry about at this point. If it's low resistance and high importance in this case, it might be something that you just do to get it out of the way. And if it's high resistance and low importance, it might be something you want to do. But if it's up here with high resistance and high importance, these are things you're going to want to prioritize and focus on to really come up with an action plan to overcome them. So think about the process as you go through this, as your exits with your new friends you're going to make. What's the top three? Brainstorm a list, you know, do the prioritization, use the high, medium, and low for resistance and importance, and then pick the three that are really the top importance to your group is holding you back from moving whatever exit you're at to the next exit. And then we capture why. And then what we want to do is we'll go around and we'll have some report outs from the groups, and then we'll ask one more exercise after that just to stay in your groups. Okay? So everybody, pick your exit, get there, stand under it. You can feel free to push the furniture out of the way. I don't own it, or you can do whatever you like with it.
Yeah. Exit 5 is over here in this corner if you don't
five
see it.
Here.
Yeah, do we, so the restroom is out of order. I'm not a health department employee, and I teach early evaluation and planning and things, and this is just so valuable to me. I really enjoy it.
I think it's very interesting. they're not how many of us have competing priorities?
Are there any other barriers that other people have?
Well, yeah. We've got a big organization. We have some gaps. So how can you make this
I'm thinking about the top level.
We need it.
One of those. Yeah. Downsizing that many of us are experiencing, there's constant reorganization, so we've got people in new positions all the time, so the learning curves are really high. I thought it was of medium importance, related to QI and love systems. Love stop downsizing, which love to stop reorganizing. Reactionary culture, so just agencies reacting to crisis and
going, we get used to it, we're really good at it. Not a lot of these things are changing. Lack of funding and prioritizing the use of that funding related to QI, medium in terms of importance, and that's as far as we got in our rating. And then lack of training.
Thank you. How about
each of the three? We had three highs. The first one being no PM system, or in our group we had varying people who had a PM system or none at all. And even the people who had chose a PM system were having issues implementing it and making it cross-sectional to all departments. Anything anyone else would like to add? And we had a variety of people from many places, different classes. The second thing that was high was not all employees understand QI training. Oh, I didn't see that. On the weakness on the PM, was a lack of resources or just a lack of knowledge for QI champion? Or they didn't have the right champion to move that team forward. Poor coordination, and they really needed everyone on board, and that was not happening after all. The lack of not all employees understand QI and no training. So that was a big issue, no matter where you were on picking the PM, not having one, whatever. Everybody had issues with that, regardless of size or company. And some of it was lack of coordination, or lack of resources, or what was really good is there was a lack of coordinated curriculum. And that's probably something that would help everybody get to the same level. Not only, and in larger places, not every, all the staff were exposed to the same level of education or same information related to those things. No agreement on what quality is. So every department had, this is what quality is to me, this is what quality is to you, but there was no cross-sectional if you had a multi-department. So functioning in silos, so if you get grant funds, you do what you have to keep that funding coming in, and the grant fund is QI. Or a lack of a general framework. Number three is a lack of communication. And that communication issue was employees, it was interdepartmental, intra-departmental, and with external and internal parties.
So I think it takes some commonalities and you go from one agent to the next, you know. So if you're thinking of an agent two, you say, can't wait till I get to agent three.
But you may have been generous, you know. So another barrier is lack of incentive.
So for exit four, we just came up with all of these barriers, then we were asked to prioritize three. And so our top three barriers are inadequate staff time, need for staff training, and competing priorities. And really, as we talked about it, the competing priorities kind of overarched both of those others. And so once you have it in place, even when you have a dedicated staff person who is your accreditation coordinator, it sounds like for those that do have accreditation coordinators, often it's just one piece of a job and they have two or three other jobs along with it. And so really having that follow through and kind of the one person in charge of herding the cat, you know, and making sure that it happens kind of goes by the wayside. And then, so with the staff training, that was a high to medium, medium resistance. But it sounds like the training staff don't get it the first time around, and that ongoing, consistent training of staff is a barrier, because you give the training once, they are not getting it, and not getting up to the point where it's totally a part of their way of thinking. And then the competing priorities, high, because when you take away time from the program to do training, to do quality improvement, there's high resistance, because they're in that job to get, you know, they're a maternal child health nurse, they're a communicable disease nurse, they're a registered sanitarian. They've got a job to do, and they already have more on their caseload or more on their schedule of inspections or whatever than they have time for. And so there's a high resistance to going moving forward. And so then that's just right up there with staff time. I think we gave everybody 16 hours a day with 8 hours of overtime. We might get there, but does our group have anything else they want to add to our discussion? Financial, I'm going to break it up because you might not. But financial resources came up with two of the individuals in our group, and I think there might be some nuggets of creativity of how the others of us in who are at Exit 4 have been able to identify resources. We can get to work done.
Thank you very much. How about Exit 5? And I should point out, when we do Exit 5, this is Ty Kane, who's probably at Exit 6. Ty is from Sedgwick County in Kansas. And Ty has been really, with Sonia Ambrose, has been really a leader in this. When we wanted to develop the first quality plan, they volunteered. Probably wish you didn't, but you didn't volunteer. So they've been sort of out there as leaders. And look at any white pavement, you'll see both of them on a lot of them.
So I think I can include business cards today in contact and frequency.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so I'm from Public Health in Seattle and King County, and we are not as far along in our journey on implementing QI agency-wide as Ty's department is, but we're sort of at the beginning. But we do have an agency-wide QI, agency QI program. As with our county has just adopted lean as a management philosophy and method. So we identified the depth of training, agency-wide training, as being a potential issue. Senior leadership support for my department. We have 12 individuals at the highest levels of the organization, and I'd say about a third of them are not quite on board, but another third is they're great moving ahead, and another third has jumped in full steam, hired their own lean experts or QI experts, and have adopted it full force as a management method. Staff making QI personal, having some ownership. This is that need to make it really departmental wide, and having everybody understand what their role is and how what they do relates to it. It's a little bit about creativity too, you know, understanding how your job can actually be better if you start working on it from this perspective. And then finally, with connecting and embedding QI in other elements of the agency infrastructure. So that's, again, making it department-wide rather than, you know, in the leaders, either formal or informal leaders holding the structure.
Very good. Thank you. So we're going to take what you've done, Pooja and I, and use it in part of the research we've been doing on this subject. And, you know, one of the things, you know, to think about as you go back to your organization, you know, you can do this exercise internally. Ask other people, what do you think of the blocks and the barriers that are holding us back and what's the important. And then really, as you do the quadrant analysis, you know, if it's low, low, you question it. If it's low, but high, you want to monitor and keep it in track. But then the ones that have high importance and low resistance, those are things, areas where you can implement. and then the other ones you need to prioritize and take on. And again, you know, you want to think about in your organization, what can you start doing now that you can...
Oh,
one more? Yeah. This will be up on the APH website once the conference is over, so you can pull it down.
Under what? How did we get to that? Under the section number. Okay.
Yeah. We all set? Okay. So, what you want to think about is what can you do now to reduce the resistance in the organization? And one of the things we've come up with lately as we've been talking about is, you know, when you think about resistance, it's a key thing in the organization. And I've been looking around on, you know, if you go up and you Google change efforts, failure, what they have up there is about 70% of all the change efforts fail. And the reason they fail is because of resistance. And last summer at the University of Minnesota, we run a summer institute. Some of you may know Bill Riley, Les Bites, and myself run a summer institute there. We have people who come in from all over the world in the MPH program. And last summer, we had, I think it was 17 countries and about 20 states represented in our class. And the last day, we were talking about resistance to change. And it was funny. It didn't matter where you came from. It was the same resistance. You know, the same type of people. So we started putting some names to them in the class. And one of the ones we came up with were these are called cave dwellers. Corporate citizens against virtually everything.
Yeah.
What we found with these people, these are the ones where you go to their cubicle and it's piled high. You can't see what they're doing. And if you step into the cubicle, screensaver comes on immediately. They don't know what computer they're on. And when you go in, there's no place to sit. So they don't want you there. They sort of live a parallel existence to the organization. If they come to a meeting, which is very seldom, they sit closest to the door, and they slouch down so that they're below the radar as a speaker. So they just sort of live this parallel resistance. The other one we came up with was, and you'll meet these at every exit, the cheerleader. You know, the one you start, we're going to do QI. Whoa, best day I've ever heard of, 150% behind it. Can't wait to get this started in my department. Can I begin now? Please. Check back about 3 weeks, 4 weeks, a month later. I'm still behind it, though. I'm ready to go. We're just going to get the right things in place. So we have those. Then we have the historian, the corporate historian. So we're going to start QI. Right there, July 26th. Well, we're thinking about doing that on August 15th. You know, and they just know all of it. They sort of the trident. Then we have the timekeepers. And they're the ones, especially at the state level, go, let's see, when was the governor elected? No point to health commissioner, sort of the thing you had back then. Yeah. Let's see, they'll be gone in 5 months. Okay, I'm not going to do it. So they sort of keep time in the process. And then the other one we run into every once in a while is Teflon. And the Teflon is the one, no matter what you throw at them, it doesn't stick. And they made a career out of doing it. And what you find with the people, you know, that are doing the Teflon, they're the ones where you're going around the table, we're going to do a QI. And it was funny, I was at a state health department last week talking about this at the end. And we were going to go around the table. One of the things the Teflon person does, one thing they always do, just when you're going to get to say, and I have to leave. You know, they cough and they leave the room. Or they get a cell phone call and they have to leave. They got a time to the second. And we were going around the room, and just as we were getting to this person, they had a coughing attack and they had to leave the room. You know, it's a perfect example. So you find these people at every exit, and you got to think about how do you deal with them? And one of the things we're talking about in the paper we're writing on this is, you know, you get them on the bus like you get them under the bus. And, you know, if you're doing this as change agents, and one of the things you want to think about, we talked about leadership. I mean, think about leadership. It's not position, it's action. So any one of you can be a change agent, leadership in front of them. And at the end of the day, some days, you're very stressed out.
If you go up on Google it and you look hit by a bus, it's a fantastic little video. I watch it every day. Because what you do is people being hit by a bus, they go, Karen, you're not going to participate in this? Boom. So go get that video and you'll find it's really great.
Can you say again what CAVE stands for, please?
Huh? What does that stand for? Oh, Corporate Citizens Against Virtually Everything.
Okay. Okay.
What's the first C?
I think there was a question earlier about QI resources that are available in the field. NATURE website, nature.org/QI. I promise this roadmap to an organizational culture of QI website is coming soon. I'll show you a snapshot of it in a second. We've got example QI plans and templates on our website. Sedgwick Counties is up there. There are a lot of great examples. QI stories, we just did a QI story on building a QI culture with Sedgwick County. We use Sedgwick County a lot. They have a lot of great information to share, but there are a number of stories from other health departments as well. We've got example storyboards of QI projects, case examples. There's a QI 101 ready-made PowerPoint training with talking points and everything. Just tailor it and go and deliver it to your staff. So someone mentioned that they wanted resources along with all of these exits and strategies. So the coming soon roadmap to a culture of QI website has each of the exits with the characteristics, the strategies, and accompanying resources that you can use right there next to those strategies. So we hope to have this live within the next few weeks, if all goes well. And then, Jack, do you want to talk about some of the PHF resources?
Okay, so if you go up on the PHF website and you Google Sedgwick County, you'll see a lot of resources. I've been done. Anyway, but we have some other things, the Public Health Handbook, the Resource Center, we have the new Quality Improvement Encyclopedia. We have a number of things up there. So go to the website, look on the PMQI, and you'll find it's a lot of things. The new roadmap website is going to be fantastic when it comes. So that'll be great. And we have these other resources. A lot of resources to help you get in the exit you're at for the next thing. Anybody have any questions? Yes.
Neighbor, you mentioned want to talk about how to deal.
Yes. It's going to be in a future issue of the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice.
That would be great. That would be very helpful.
But running low with the bus is the best one.
It's
quickest and it's the easiest. In the front. Just wait in the parking lot at night. You know, they come out and bang.
I don't think I
could you go back to that last slide?
Sure.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Any other questions? If not, we thank you for your participation. It was early in the morning.
Thank you all.